Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Welcome to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Our subject this week is going to be taking a look at, I guess, what happens after job, getting stuff in the hands of clients. So we're going to be speaking with Andreas Wacker, the creator of Interdubs, about that. But before we get into that, I kind of want to talk about a little bit about my perceptions of IBC, and I'm really interested in hearing from the listeners based upon what I saw at IBC. It kind of seemed to be a rain cloud over IBC. A lot of the manufacturers were really in a kind of a depressed state about the economy. You know, not many purchases going on, talking about, you know, the commercial, TV commercial industry being down, other industries being down. And, you know, basically the question I got a lot there was, you know, what's your perception of the industry? Has it kind of changed forever now? Is this one of those moments that is kind of a game changer in what happens? And you're certainly seeing a downturn in advertising, as I mentioned. Here in the States, I think people doing car advertising have been really heavily hurt because of the problems with the automotive industry in the States. Talking to some friends at post houses in Amsterdam, Paris, and London, also seems to be some real difficulty in the commercials business, especially. Maybe not so much on the film side, where many of the facilities in Soho are actually ramping up and hiring quite a few people. So I guess it'd be interesting in hearing kind of the thoughts in your corner of the world and your industry. I've actually created a forum thread about this, and you can find that link in the quick take, which announces this podcast. Just really kind of like to try and get the pulse of the industry. And I know there are a variety of industries, whether broadcast, broadcast design, film post, and just try and gauge from those of you out there kind of what you're seeing in your neck of the world. So we do appreciate it if you took the time to drop by the forums and kind of post in that thread and let us know what's going on. It'd be fantastic. Well, onto our podcast for this week. And as I mentioned earlier, it's with Andreas Wacker, who founded Interdubs, which is effectively a site that facilities can use to actually upload their materials and let clients download it. Basically, Andreas takes care of it, managing it, and so that you don't have to. We actually use that here at Hootenanny, the folks that FX Guide and FX PhD are involved with, and they love it from that standpoint. It works, it's bulletproof, new technology comes out, like changes in the iPhone, Andreas is always on it. And he's actually really, I think, really in a good position to kind of quantify what he's seeing in the industry and how people are getting materials to each other, what clients are using, what the technical clients are using. So I think it'll be an interesting interview. Let's go ahead and join that now. Again, Jeff Huser speaking with Andreas Wacker.
Well, Andreas, welcome back to the FX Podcast. You're one of our rare repeat guests here after the Zodiac podcast.
After a couple of years, I thought I'd come back on and ramble about something else.
That's right. So let's talk today about sharing work online for content creation. I like the way you phrased that.
Yeah, that is something that I think is maybe of interest because time has passed since we had the internet, and it has developed slowly. But I feel that now there is a whole new set of capabilities that you can actually use it for, and that's something that we maybe want to talk a little bit about.
Yeah, I think you and I both came up from the time frame when 3/4 inch was the king, and for God, how long did that run?
Exactly.
And a lot longer than anybody expected.
We could convince people to use DVDs even, and that was very exciting. And
although more painful to make for most people, I will say.
It was. And on the web, you had 320 by 240 clips back
Sorensen.
Then. Sorensen 3 was in the day, actually very nice, but that's what was there for a long time. And what I find surprising is that people still make clips that small these days sometimes, which is, if you look at the capabilities that there are, it really is surprising to go that small, for instance. And for posting content online, you have these three elements that all need to line up, and that's the bandwidth that you have to connect to the internet, your capability of your computer, and the server end that then feeds it. And the bandwidth that people have and the capabilities of the computers in the last 10 years have just exploded. If you look at a modern Mac laptop, now it's just so much more powerful than it used to be, resolution-wise as well as CPU-wise. And so posting something smaller than, I would say, 500 pixels wide is actually something posting almost for the last century. It it still gets done a lot, but I think more out of habit than it would match any need that's out there.
Right. I mean, I know a lot of places I've worked, we've done 960 by 540 postings, for example, for half res HD.
Yeah. Yes, and that's the, out of a sudden, the difference back to those 320 to 40 days back then, the quick times were proxies. They were kind of like giving you an idea about the job. And now, back then, it was you had the television job with the normal TV resolution, and then you had that proxy on that, on the internet. And now you have actually the equivalent of the job online, and the job itself, the content will be available in the final release in many, many resolutions. Could go from HD, 1920, 1080, all the way down to some web or mobile phone outlet or so that is even lower than the resolution than the work in progress posting. So that range has changed tremendously.
Yeah, there has been a big shift I've noticed in client expectations. It used to be that, you know, everything was considered proxy until the DVD arrived. And that was considered, oh, that's the best we can look at.
Because it came out on the TV as well.
And right. But now it seems that, well, deadlines are shrunk, so that definitely hurts. But has pushed people to trust the QuickTimes much more. And QuickTime, I think, is interesting because I know that seems to be this. That's, and you have stats on all this stuff from Interdubs, which is a site we're going to talk about later on. You're responsible for creating the QuickTime seems to be the predominant container.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was, again, historically, there was the containers where there was Reel for a while, and then Windows tried to get into the space. And QuickTime is so old and always was there, and Apple seemed to pay a lot of attention to it, and then again not. So it's shifting in and out of their focus. And in the end, then Flash came up, and things like YouTube kind of took Flash and said, this is what everybody uses it. And people still say, oh, you should use Flash because everybody has it. But looking today at computers and how they've been installed, it's interesting because QuickTime is as widely spread than Flash because of the iTunes and the iPhone. Apple did kind of like a backdoor draft on that one that they got QuickTime onto everybody's computer. So installation base-wise, right now, Flash and QuickTime are equivalent. What I like better about QuickTime is that they still have the upper hand in the progressive download area. So the moment you're bandwidth is not as high as the bandwidth that the clip requires. You need to wait a little bit before the clip plays. And QuickTime does a good job in letting you wait, indicating how long it takes, and then once it starts playing, it plays through, and that is the key.
Right. For the creatives, we don't want their work stopping and starting. I mean, we've all seen that with other players where, you know, it'll start playing and then stop, or in worst case, what was the Reel used to always, like, re-changed, it could actually change
the quality on the they meant well with that, but in the end, you were never sure what you were looking at. And then you had the little thing saying buffering. And that is for short form work, I think it's just horrible. If you want to, you can wait and you can afford to wait a little bit, but once it's playing, it should play through because you then judge the work. You want to be able to tell. And also in Flash, that is not solved entirely yet. That part is, I have never seen a Flash player that if you rise with your bandwidth to the limit, it always goes into this area. If you have ample bandwidth, it's fine. And I think it's almost when people sell these sites, they always sell them on very, very high bandwidth. So the client approving the system, whatever it might be, never sees it in this real life thing. So it doesn't see it, how it degrades. And QuickTime does well in that, how it handles these things. And the other thing is that it's also easy for people to create QuickTime content in a QuickTime container. So all you need is a laptop and then a QuickTime Pro license if you want to go into it.
We were talking about previously is the viewing of it on a computer. I mean, that's come a long way, too, because it used to be that you wanted to see it on a tube, but now half the people are watching it on plasmas or LCDs, or not half, but a good number of people. Yeah. There's such a mixed bag of what people are watching the content on.
But in the same time, it used to be that the TV was there with its interlaced device and the little beam running over it, and then computers were the same, but computers switched to LCDs quicker. And now all the flat panel technology, be it LCD or plasma, that's what people watch the content on. And if you kind of consider the advertisement dollars sitting in front of a normal television tube right now, like the amount of spending potential behind that compared to plasmas and panels and so on, and then it's fair to say that it has shifted. Everything is now on flat panels, and so there's no point for interlacing, for instance, for anything. That's an interesting technology if you have a television tube, but not any longer. And that's another change. It's a first-class citizen now, having your laptop display. And creatives or people deciding on work, they have grown up on these things. They have no problem with it being on a computer. It is not hostile any longer. It is the premier normal environment.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the technology here. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the components are people have to have the right things installed on their computers.
Right,
but then
right.
There's also bandwidth.
Yeah.
People have to be smart about how they encode their clips so that it reaches the broadest. So their clients aren't suffering. I mean, most facilities in our space are going to have a bigger pipe than all of the clients or people trying to watch this, you know, at home. A lot of times stuff gets posted at night for the clients to look at. And so you probably have some insight on that.
The interesting thing of, like, the posting experience is that how big the variety of potential experiences is. On a television environment or so, you have the TV, and it used to be analog and snowy, and that's it. But it either more or less worked or didn't work. And the same with the DVD. The DVD you give to somebody, it does play and it doesn't play. And in the posting space, you have so many variables and so many things that can influence it. In the best case, it's an awesome experience. And then in the not-so-good cases, there's various reasons for that and various things that can get things into trouble. What has been nice overall in this area of getting things into trouble is the proliferation of Mac laptops or Macs overall. When I look at my stats that I have access to in my services, and I can talk about those maybe a little bit later, I was actually surprised that there's 80% of all people in the pro space, so advertisement and production companies and so on, right now using Apple products, laptops. Firefox and Safari, both browsers come up there, so they're not like total Appleoids, but it's kind of interesting how that became the golden standard in hardware.
Right. Well, that would echo my experience in the actual suite with commercial clients that most of the time you turn around and there's a wall of Apple laptops.
Yeah. And it's actually interesting to see how it flips that the PC users become out of a sudden how Apple users like us who have been using them for a long time have felt that they're kind of the outcast. And it's like, oh, you can't do this because it's a PC? Too bad. that has flipped in our space. But it is nice because you have a predictable environment. You have a predictable environment in terms of browsers. And overall, the machines work well and still have no malware. So the Apple malware-free environment is helpful because you tend to trust the internet. You tend to trust what's coming there much more if you're battling the internet as being this hostile environment where you have to always be out and watching. I only know it from theory, but I think it does help that we can trust the net and can trust what it can do.
Right. Do you have any sense of how I was noticing there's this, you know, just looking around the world, traveling, things like that. Like, there's the huge influx of Apple laptops over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see clam tops, the old, you know, the blue and orange.
Right, they're all gone, right?
I mean, literally, you never see them.
Yeah, no, it's the hardware that is out there is actually very, very recent. It's all flushed out quite a bit. I think in our space, because people make money with their laptops, so they use them a lot, and they also generate value, so they can afford to go through the generations. And to be honest, I think the last three hardware generation upgrades, they're nice for power users, but most of the people don't need that fast of a computer.
Right. But the last three generations of laptops, you know, are going to be able to play back this content with no problems.
Yes, so that's the nice thing about it, that even three generation old computers still have enough oomph to play back something modern, something modernly encoded, because for that you need a little bit more CPU power than you used to for the Sorensen and stuff. That's the H.264 codec that I love so dearly, or that's actually everywhere, is needing a little bit of CPU to decoding it, but everybody has that. Everybody can play that back, and with that, you can benefit from a huge technology, the thing. I mean, H.264 is just amazing in what it does. And if you look a little bit closer, it's somewhat hidden in the alphabet soup, where it always, in how many places it is actually being used. There's the ABC HD codecs that are basically just that. There's Blu-ray. All these different technologies are all based on the same algorithm or codec. And there's a reason for that, because the results are just astonishing. They're just amazing if you think about how much how little bandwidth you need for a very, very good picture. It's actually surprising. When I look at how people encode, I find that for the pixel dimensions that they have, they tend to throw way too much bandwidth on the clip side, so clip bandwidth at that. I think out of an old habit that they used to do that with other codecs, but H.264 can deliver an awesome picture in very little bandwidth. With below 2 megabit, you have the capability to fill a 700 or 900 pixel wide content. But if you look at how Apple encodes and everybody else, people tend to throw a lot of clip megabit at these images. And of course, it doesn't hurt, and we have the bandwidth, but H.264 is much better than people I use it for, I think. So that is something that's very interesting.
I know that dealing with clients, we oftentimes run into unusual requests. Mm-hmm. I know that a client I had over the years, I used to always ask for in the specs, it was always posting, you know, a normal QuickTime posting for us, which would have been, H.264 at the time. But there was always a request for some odd Windows media format, file. And I was I tracked down a producer who explained to me that it was some guy in the legal department.
Yeah.
They had to approve it, but they never upgraded his computer.
They were sitting on their old hardware.
And that's all they could ever. And so it was like, okay. And then you get into the...
It's like time travel.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, for us, it became it was becoming an issue just because, at the end of a session, the dubs has always been a nightmare. Waiting for the dubs, jokingly has always been referred to as sometimes takes longer than the job.
Yeah.
And then when DVDs came around, that sometimes became worse.
Yeah.
And then, then QuickTime's made it easier, but then all of a sudden you started getting requests for bizarre flavors and multiple options and things like that.
People have to find out and figure out, is that guy in the legal department important and how to, and then they have to, somebody has to pick up the phone in the organization to figure out all these out. There's all these choices. When there is, sometimes it is solvable and sometimes not, but technology-wise, it's like driving your Ford T model into a modern car shop. I mean, they would all look at this like, oh, this is cute, but can they fix it? Probably not. And, that's where we have this huge range of backlog. But luckily, most of the users out there have decent bandwidth, decent hardware, and decent installed, like QuickTime and other codecs. So that is the fringe experience these days.
Do you have some take? I mean, I have Fios here at the house, so I have 20 megabits. Do you have some sense? But, I mean, that's been a hard time coming. When I moved into this house, I could get 500K, something like that. It's gradually increased, and then it leaped to 20. Mm-hmm. Do you have some sense of users of interdubs?
Yeah, I actually, because it is interesting and to see how much capability there is, and it's spread out. And so I looked back over the entire history of downloads and so on, and then it's probably hard to explain in a podcast because maybe we should put some visual things up to where what the capabilities are, but just to cite from that, these days, if you put up a 2 megabit clip, that 2,000 kilobit, then you can think that about 70% of all people in the pro space can download it and play it right away, so that they have better than 2 megabit connections. That's about 70%. It will be interesting to see how that historically evolved and so on. And the nice thing is, like, QuickTime players degrade gracefully. If you don't have that all, then you can still wait a little bit.
You just wait longer, but you still get the same quality.
Yes.
That's why we love it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll try to put a graphic or something.
That would be maybe interesting because it is developing. And the benefit, Interdebs is this system that maybe we can talk about later.
Let's talk a little bit about it now, though, because we mentioned a couple times. I want to talk about it a little bit. I mean, I probably first came to know you back in Method days, when Method was young, and all of us were struggling to figure out all of us were struggling to figure out how to put content on the web, not so much for the clients, but for ourselves, for promotional value. And at the time, everybody was doing HTML by hand and things, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I found this Method website with not only lots of clips on it, but what appeared to me to be a database behind the whole thing. And sure enough, it was your creation.
Right, but I basically took the IMDb concept and applied it to a commercial production or a visual effects company so that we had all credits online and we decided from the beginning to put all jobs that we ever made online, which was very helpful for everybody in the end, because we built this online body of work. And it also was interesting for me personally, because I could gain a lot of experience of how to run websites, how to maintain them, databases I almost fell in love with. I kind of, it's a weird thing to say, but I sure. really like the capabilities that you get and with that. And in a little side detour, what at Method we had, what most people had for work in progress posting, just their own little system. It was a glorified FTP, something that clients wouldn't need to be bothered with FTP. There was a skin, so to say, in front of it, but it was more or less that. And I always wanted to do something better, but in the same time, for just one company, it didn't feel the efforts were not, it wasn't that important. While the website was something for PR purposes, it was very important, this work in progress posting system was not that. But when I left in 05, the thought of this system kind of lingered around, and at some point a client of mine said, approached me and said that he really needs to have a system in this area. And I felt, well, I make maybe one and make this a beta version of that, I then can roll into something that I can use for multiple clients. And that has then developed, and officially in 07 it has been released, and it actually took off quite a bit. I'm somewhat surprised, but last Super Bowl we had 60% of all spots were going through Interdubs. So that I was actually, when I counted them all up, it was quite amazing. But it is a system that then allows people, different companies, to run it, and it looks like the individual company does nothing.
Their branding.
Yes, they're entirely their branding, but the utilities and tools that you need for work in progress posting all come out of the same pool. It's hosted.
Right, reliable. So basically, you're taking the need for each facility to reinvent the wheel.
Yes, exactly.
Away.
Right.
And spreading that development and risk and bandwidth,
right,
and reliability.
And the work that goes into maintaining it, to upgrading it, keeping it current, dealing with little quirks, dealing with little things. Safari, there's a new Safari version, and then therefore in the website things need to change. That kind of maintenance work, spread over 60 clients, it's worth doing that. If you have your own site, it's only so much that you can do. And that's the thought behind it. And at the same time, not branding it like Interdubs, but branding it like the company that uses it, because it's their communication. It is
right.
that what they want to present. And in the end, basically, the goal is to be seamless, and to go away, to be almost invisible, because it is about the success of the system. Is if you post something and the dub in the end of the job is not, it goes smooth, you upload it quickly, and you can send the clients a link, and they click on it, and they see your work very easily without any trouble. That's all there should be. And if that works, then that's it's a very good thing. I mean, it does, based on the technologies that we described before, it makes for very interesting experiences and postings. And when I look at some of my clients' stats, for instance, when I look how much they work, how much they posted before compared to when they have a system where it's easy, some of them had it five times. They post now five times more than they used to do. Not that they work five times more, but since it's easier, they do it more frequently. And in the end, the clients have a better viewability on the job, and they know better what it is. And of course, now with everybody trying to save time and travel cost and so on, having everybody in an online approval process available, no matter whether they're on site or not, is helpful. Helps everybody, I think.
Right, and I from my standpoint, I like the idea that, you know, first you're not having one person, an engineer, for example, in a facility that has to then split off and spend,
right,
you know, X amount of percent of their time worrying,
right,
about this detail,
yeah,
which is a huge undertaking. Plus, the other thing from my observation is that, you know, you have the breadth of knowledge now of being able to do things like look across all 60 clients and say, look, I'm having a problem with this area.
Right.
You know, this is a bottleneck. This is, you know, and you can focus on those problems.
It's worth it. It's really
absolutely
worth going after every detail, because overall many people benefit from it, or having little things like there's now a little warning if you post a clip that has a bandwidth that's much higher than most people can use it, then you have that little thing in there. Of course, everybody can write that in their homegrown systems, but the question is it worth it, or is it maybe that the internal engineering know-how and so on, isn't that better be applied to help the artist directly in all that instead of reinventing the wheel for a posting system?
Right. So Interdubs is you.
Yes.
It's a single person,
yes,
company?
Yes. It's which actually, It's very unusual, I think, because it's and again, 60% of all Super Bowl spots in one person is kind of an odd thing. But it does work, and in the end, it didn't surprise me. When I started it, of course, I had a reputation to lose. If I would have gone into it, and it would have basically made promises that I wouldn't have come through, it would have been horrible. So I thought about it very much. And the nice thing is, these days, technology is that far that you can do that. That I had the experience with the servers, for instance, to what it would take to run 24/7 servers all the time. I'm blessed with an awesome data center, so that I didn't have to look for that. I knew I had a data center that was very well connected, very well run, and that's the foundation on that I had. And the other thing is that with the concept of the database and that, I started simple and then encouraged all clients all the time, which I constantly still do, to give me their feedback, to let me know what's wrong with the system, and basically change these things all the time, little by little, make the system better. And I, at some point, I started a little update counter in it, and I think I have now 1,121 updates to the running system. So everybody, there were 1,121 reasons to make something better. Sometimes I broke something, luckily not that often, and sometimes it was just a spelling error. There's a lot of those.
That happens.
Well, especially for me. But then there's also this dialogue and this evolvement of things where people have ideas, and then they tell me what to do. And what that system is right now is mostly based on client feedback. My overall ideas and so on still in there, but actually the most valuable things are also that what the clients need, because they know best what makes their life easier and so on. And then that feedback loop has actually been the most exciting and the most fun about the whole thing, to have a dialogue with all these people and trying to kind of like make their work a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things you told me when we've talked about the system in the past is the, since you have an all-you-can-eat, basically unlimited bandwidth policy, unlimited storage space policy, eventually it would be nice to do some house cleaning.
Yeah.
I thought you'd come up, but why don't you talk about the clever system.
Since I don't want to have a sales team, I thought I need simple, super simple terms. So and that means storage is cheap too, especially if I built the machines myself, because I like doing that, and then I think I get good value and very stable, solid machines on it that. And I come to the cleanup thing first, but I'm a geek, so I like to ramble about these things, details, and like when I build new machines, for instance, I buy the hard drives. Buy them in two different lots, same hard drive, but so that if there's a bad batch, I don't get entirely killed by it. And then I run them for like 2 days, because in my experience, and when Google released their data, I showed that there's a lot of infant mortality on drives. So it's little things like that where you apply engineering knowledge and best practices to something where you can, as a single person, build something that's actually where I can feel the hardware quality that I come up with out of the experience and so on. It's not bad. I would actually, no matter how much money I would spend, I wouldn't think that I get a better machine from a big vendor.
Right.
Because there's that applied knowledge to that.
That infant mortality thing, real quick, it just makes me crazy, because it makes you think that the number of times that you've bought a hard drive for a specific purpose and immediately plugged it in and filled it up.
Yeah,
and then assume that everything's beautiful.
Right. Or you get a new laptop.
Right.
And then you install it. I mean, luckily, Apple's install and entrance... whatever that thing is called that you can transfer your thing makes it easy, but it used to be a lot of work into something, and then actually you are the highest risk if you can.
Right.
Well, ideally vendors basically say these are pre-tested or something, but then they would expose their issue a little bit with the infant mortality. So with
that's
a lot of...
I'm sorry, I'm going to go off track, but I just thought that was interesting, because I think that's a good nugget that I just...
Yeah. And then you're right, when it hurts worse, it happens the most. Some of our clients had like huge amount of jobs there, because they never needed to pay for it. And then in last December, I kind of like tried to get them to clean up. And then I actually did a cleanup drive where they basically were, I would pay for the vaccination of kids when they would clean up gigabytes. So for each gigabyte, I would vaccinate a kid. And some clients really like that. And so we got a couple of hundred of kids clean. Interestingly enough, it didn't stick for everybody. So now I actually have to people, they technically would need to charge $25 per gigabyte, which is ridiculously high, if they wouldn't clean up stuff that hasn't been accessed by a client in 6 months. But there's a tool, so you get a notice.
You make easy tools to make it. So in one way, first of all, you encouraged them by a charity donation,
That worked for some, and that was great, but then some others were still too busy to do it.
And so, but if you make an easy tool for them, that solves the problem. Yeah.
So the carrot worked in one way, and then on the other end, there was the need for a stick. But the nice thing is, if you have the right tools, you can work around these problems as they come up. So as the storage, then there was a simple screen for people to just click through and delete everything that hasn't been, and they like it. And so now that problem has been solved as well. But that's something conceptually, when I started it, I couldn't have known that it would come about.
Sure.
And instead of being afraid and having to charge for storage in the beginning, it's kind of like, no, just do things first and then figure out what comes from it.
What I like is, it is essentially a database. It is a database, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of storage.
Right.
So everything, from accounting, I'm sure, is just additional entries to the database.
Yeah, if there's needs to, or making reels, for instance, to just drag a couple of clips together and then send a reel out with something.
Talk about that.
It's just, I think it's very much the same as work in progress posting. It's just a little bit a different angle that you have your body of work in there and you have your credits and you have, I introduced tags, so you can tag all the work like car commercials or as many tags as you like, and then you can search for them and just drag them into the order. And there the interface...
All in a web browser.
All in a web browser, right. Yeah. I mean, because the interface there, or the typical InterDubs user is actually a person that can operate a web browser. I try to. And in some areas of the admin interface, I definitely failed right now. I mean, this is like, I'm an engineer, and so I need to go back because it's over complex. But for the real making things, it's really just a search, drag and drop. And it's one of these Ajax searches where maybe we can put a
We put quick a time. Or yeah,
exactly,
that'd be great.
That shows it. But you just, while you type, it brings up the clips that you could, and then you drag them into the right order, and off you go and send a reel out.
Because we always get those kind of calls, and usually at 5 o'clock on a Friday, where, we need a reel right away water, or something.
In my experience, the people that award the jobs actually feel much, much more right now that they need to see that you have actually done exactly that. So if you have a dolphin jumping out of the water, that's good. But if they want to see like an orca and you only have a dolphin, that's already bad. It's that fantasy. So the closer you can get, and the easier it is to grab these things, and the quicker you get the presentation out, the better that is, I think, in this market. And coming back to our initial points, you don't give them just a proxy or something small. You give them the real work. You give them, they can judge by that. They can play it on their computer and they can see right away what you give them. And they don't, the chances that they click on a link are much higher than they get the DVD out and basically put it into the DVD player, turn around and so on. So that's instantly there. And of course, the other nice thing is that you can track it. So you can track who clicked on which link to give you some idea of what was going on and where the usage really has been, and that's tricky to do on a DVD.
So there's a full comment system, I assume, with it,
clients can
see that kind of information, that they actually did view it, but when they clicked it. But
yeah, that you can see who clicked it and who used it, and there's also a comment section, and I don't know why it is. Is it whether it's me that I haven't implemented it right yet, or whether people don't want to comment that much? I think overall my experience is, while some people do comment quite a bit, 95% of all users or more actually prefer to send emails back.
Yeah.
Phone calls or whatever other means, or IM, things like that. And that's interesting, because the comment system wasn't like the final thing of InterDubs and so on. You put these things out there and then you see what gets used. And when I have time, we'll look at it further and say, can I maybe integrate more with IM or with other things or with phone calls? So it's an ongoing thing where you look at the market, look at the capabilities, and then need to react to it. And sometimes a little bit slow on it, but overall, it is that movement that is very helpful to build something that's useful.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember, it was back 15 years ago or so. I remember seeing a system where you could mark up frames, draw on them, and put post-it notes.
I've seen all those kind of
systems.
Jazz was one, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Long time ago. Yeah. It was amazing, actually. I always thought it was a cool idea, mm-hmm. but I never, you would think it would be everywhere if that was the case.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anybody using it. I mean, I guess there's some of that. Most times you're on the phone with the client.
Right.
You want them to see a good quality.
I mean, there are some solutions like Cinesync or so for specific specific things, but they are not, it's like that everybody is using them.
And yeah, they're more on the feature film side.
And very specific. And I think it is that simple wins, that if something that's unintrusive and very simple to use, that's much easier embraced than something that's complex and something that kind of needs you to do a lot of things, learn something more. So people want to just watch something, watch it in good quality, but the commenting alone is that they don't really are eager to embrace it. Some people do, and there's a small percentage of them that actually use it well. And because you could think of storing these comments and kind of like keeping notes to that could be very interesting. And I know that there is in-house systems that do that, and it's a very interesting area. It could be easily be moved to the cloud for that and to have a dialogue and everybody communicating about these things. But as long as people use comments as few as they do right now, I don't see value or purpose. That is the next direction. I'm not sure.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. It is funny how things move. The move to the cloud comment is just, it's iPhones in particular. I mean, I've just become aware of it in my own daily life with, you know, stupid everything. I mean, I was at the store this weekend and I didn't have a recipe with me. And I'm like, wait a minute, why do I have those in FileMaker when I could move them to Evernote?
Yeah, and then you have them in the store when you need
anywhere,
them.
Anywhere, any computer I have in front of or my phone, whatever. Yeah, it's like, it really is an interesting concept when you start thinking about these things.
Right.
And it's better done with somebody like you on a more global system as opposed to somebody trying to do that in a small engineering, you know, one company.
It creeps up. These changes creep up that you kind of, you get the internet and it starts working, and it starts working so well that you rely on it. And at some point you kind of like, oh, then you rather have it here than there. Have it not locally, things, information and so on, have it there. As long as it works good, as long as it works well enough to be not a nuisance and not be like a problem. That's the big important thing with the cloud thing overall, that it also can invite disaster, that you trust the system and you, worst case scenario, you upload all your personal pictures to this one service and that's nice for you, but if they go out of business or go away, then all of a sudden there's nothing left. So there's a whole new danger to that as well.
And then the whole copyright issue has become a big scary thing. I mean, I've started restricting how big I post stuff on sites like Flickr, because of conversations I've had with people who've seen their stuff stolen and used.
That's true. I'm very lucky that I came clean on the Interdubs logo, because that was actually, it used to be an image that you found when you go to Google and say clouds, and then that's when you found it. And it was a nice story because this, at the end, I used it, I liked it. It was a temp thing. But then it kind of ran with it. And after a couple of weeks, I was like, oh, my God, I just got this from. So I got in touch with the guy. And then actually he was very nice and understood and was also happy that I then was willing to buy it. And he didn't extort me. And so it all was a happy ending to it. But it's kind of tricky with copyrights these days.
Well, this is interesting. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we want to talk about with
the we bored people enough with things, right?
Do you talk about the is this a per clip? So in terms of the clients paying for the service?
Oh, no. I wanted to make things simple. So it's a flat fee of $285 a month.
$285 a month.
Yeah, and that's it. And all you can eat for that. So that is simple, predictable. And in these times, it's money isn't that's widely flowing around any longer. It's based around the cost that I have on my end, so that it's sustainable and workable. And instead of like trying to jump at what the market would bear at the point and then having to negotiate or pay salespeople, I thought, no, this is a good price for me. It works out. And then let's see what happens then. And what happened was that 60 people felt that was a good deal and they went for it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks guys for that. And Andreas, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Been a friend of us for a while and actually serves at times as an advisor on the tech side of the website for FX PhD and FX Guide. And like I said, we actually use his service. The folks here at Hootenanny really love it. So if you have the time, check it out. It's a really nice service. Well, that's it for this week. We've got some really good stuff coming out in the upcoming weeks. We're trying to be regular with our FX Guide TV and FX Podcast, just trying to be consistent in getting them out to you guys. As always, if you have any suggestions or anything, you can drop us a line at FX Guide, and we'd appreciate hearing from you. For my partners in crime, Jeff Huser and Mike Seymour, Thanks for listening.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.